Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Announce my first sponsor, Robin Kellison from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
Welcome to the show today. I'm super excited to bring back somebody who was on when I very first started, but still has always been and remains in the top downloaded episode. And so here to talk to us about tree pruning is Russ Medge from Utah. Welcome back, Russ.
Hey, thanks, Jackie. I appreciate you having me back on. I actually listened to our last episode and I was kind of chuckling because I had my daughter with me, and you can kind of hear her in the background a little bit playing with toys. And so if you do listen to that, you'll definitely hear her in the background. But
well, and listeners probably will, because there's been a lot of new listeners since then. So if you haven't checked out Russ Medge, he's is it episode 27, 28? It's right in there in the 20s, I know.
Yeah.
And it's a great one. And like I said, it's been in the top most downloaded episodes since we aired it. And so definitely check that out. And then today you're back to tell us a little bit more. So first off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, so I, last time I was a daughter of three, or a father of three daughters, expecting a fourth, and now I'm a father of four daughters, so that's probably been the biggest change since last year. But I own and operate a small business in Salt Lake City where I prune and care for fruit trees, mostly for people with a backyard orchard. Most of my clients just have one or two trees, and I just have a list of clients that I prune for year after year after year, and I love my job. There's not very many people that can say that they love their job, but I'm definitely one of them.
Excellent. Do you just want to tell listeners once more about like your very first gardening experience, even if they've heard it before? It never hurts to hear something again. Like, who were you with? Were you a kid, an adult? Like, what was your very first gardening experience? How'd you fall in love with trees?
Yeah, I don't have a first experience, just because I've been around gardens since I was a little kid. But I do remember as a child spending a lot of time in trees, just climbing trees. I have four brothers, and I have a daughter or a sister too, but on both sides of me I have a brother that's just a little older than me and one that's a little bit younger than me, and we just were typical boys, just spent a lot of time climbing trees. And we had lots of large mature apple trees that were big enough to climb as a kid, and we used to catch honeybees in jars and see how many we could fit in a jar.
Really?
And just kind of catch bugs and climb trees and doing the typical boy thing.
All right, I like that. So you weren't worried the honeybees were going to sting you, huh? I just heard people worry about that the other day. I go out where our bees are, and I never worry they're going to sting me.
Yeah, I got stung several times throughout the summer, just mm-hmm. usually running around barefoot, stepping on a dandelion in the grass that had a bee on it. That was just part of growing up mm-hmm. for me. And we were careful, but we would just turn the jar upside down so all the bees would fly upward, and we'd just see how many we could get in a jar.
Oh, how interesting.
But what's interesting is I remember these, when the trees were in bloom, they were just humming with bees. I mean, every single blossom had a bee on it. And now that I prune fruit trees, we have a few apricots starting to bloom here in Salt Lake, and I seldomly see a honeybee. It's kind of sad how it's changed over the years. But I think nowadays with all the pesticides and everything, it's definitely affected the bee population. I've experienced that and seen it firsthand.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about how listeners can make their trees, a nicer home for the bees. So maybe we'll get more bees. So do you want to tell us some fruit tree? Like when we very first started talking, you were saying it's raining and that you, that makes it harder to prune trees. I'll just let you talk.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, pest control is something that even organic gardeners have to do. It's just different. And the first and most important part of making sure your tree is not susceptible to pests is to have good cultural practices. And what that means is make sure your tree has plenty of water. Make sure your tree is planted in a location in your garden where it's getting plenty of sunlight. Make sure that you remove the lawn from the base of the tree. A lot of my customers plant fruit trees in the middle of their lawn, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but lawn mowers and string trimmers come and start damaging the bark. And so there's just a lot of things that you can do to make sure that your tree is as healthy as it can possibly be. I'll just tell you a story. I actually had one customer of mine that I pruned for the very first time last year. He called me up in the summer, and I could just hear that kind of this anger in his voice. And he told me that his apricot tree that he remembers planting when he first bought the house that was probably 2 feet in diameter and 30 feet tall, he called me and told me that his tree was dying. And so I just, you know, I knew it wasn't because I did anything wrong in the pruning, because pruning trees doesn't kill trees. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, let's take a look at it. Did you look around the base of the tree? Is there any bleeding or anything happening from the trunk or from the bark? You know, what do the leaves look like? And so I just started asking him all these questions. And so he's like, no, I think you just pruned it too heavy. And so I was like, well, go out, take some pictures and send them to me so we can try to identify what's going on with this tree. And so sure enough, he went out there, took some pictures of the trunk, and inside the bark, he could see the little exoskeleton of a boring insect that had emerged from the bark, and it had left its exoskeleton kind of embedded in the bark. And so, and I can send you pictures of that if you'd like. Okay. But he lost a mature tree that wasn't just, a tree that, you know, he wasn't emotionally attached to. This is something that was part of his existence. And he, at that point, he actually broke down in tears. And aww. He was just devastated that something like that could happen. And so, you know, it's experiences like that that, you know, it's hard for me to see something like that happen too. And so I think what happened is we had a really early spring last year.
Yeah.
And then we had some really cold weather and some snow pretty late in the season. And then we had a really hot, dry summer. And I think what happened is that tree was under a lot of stress, and, you know, probably experiencing some drought conditions. But just that alone, putting a tree under stress and it struggling to get enough water is the main reason why it'll be more susceptible to an infestation like that. Every tree is going to have pests. That's just part of nature. It's part of gardening. That's just what we do. But it's when you put a tree under stress, that's when the infestations occur. And so we're not trying to eradicate every single bug out there, but we are wanting to make sure that the tree is as healthy as it can possibly be, because it can fight off a good portion of the pests, and that's the difference between life or death for a tree. And so that's kind of the first step, I guess, is that cultural, making sure that the tree is as healthy as it can possibly be, is the probably the most important thing that you as a gardener can do to ensure that your fruit trees are going to remain pest free, and I don't like to use pest free, but they're going to remain
maybe disease free.
Able to fight off the natural diseases that occur in our areas. So
I think this is just awesome. I think people are really going to love to hear this today. I've been calling them the golden seeds, so we could call these golden fruit seeds today. That people are, but I just think that's so important that, and I've had a lot of guests come on lately talking about how big of a difference water can make in your production. But I also think it's important as our climate's changing. I mean, yeah, last year we had very similar conditions, you know, super early spring, and we're having it again. I mean, here it is, you know, yesterday was the first day of spring. I know years where we've had snow on the first day of spring, and it is just, you know, practically dried out already. All the snow's gone. And
yep.
My husband's like, we could start planting out in the garden already. And we're in, yeah, you know, the Rocky Mountains of Montana, planting in the end of March. And then, yeah, we had that super hot. I mean, we had a big fire season last summer.
Yeah, I remember driving through that part of the country last at the end of the summer. And it was just smoky and, yeah,
and so very dry. Giving listeners some suggestions and things that they can do to help their trees be able to stay healthy ahead of time. So that, I think, is just great advice. So
yes.
Go ahead and tell us more.
Yeah. So that's kind of the, you know, the cultural practices is probably the most important thing you can do. And like you're saying, it's not just for pest control. You're going to get much better fruit as well by taking care of your tree and making sure that it's healthy. There's multiple benefits to that. So once you've kind of ensured that you have a good cultural practices, pruning is an important part. We talked about that on our first interview, how pruning will open up the tree. It allows more light into the tree. It gives the tree more airflow so that we don't get near as much fungi kind of breeding inside of the canopy of the tree. And so, you know, pruning is another cultural practice, but that it is important to make sure that you're pruning the tree properly, and that's going to ensure that your tree has fewer pest problems. But one of the things that I like to bring up during the pruning process is, you know, correct pruning techniques is also going to minimize pest infestations. I just actually pulled my chainsaw out, which is a rare thing for me to do, but I pulled the chainsaw out and I took a peach tree down to the ground, to ground level, this last week, and it was infested with, and I may be pronouncing this wrong, but Cytosporum cankers. And so it's a fungal disease that infects the peach tree branches. It causes bleeding. You get that gummy sap just oozing all over all the branches. And it's a fungus, and the tree was pretty open. But there's a lot of things that can cause that. For one, it was kind of in a shaded area, so the tree was not planted correctly, so it wasn't getting the energy that it needed to stay healthy. And then improper pruning techniques. One of the steps in my 8-step pruning method that I use is to remove the leader. So I like to prune my trees so they have a nice open center, to allow the sunlight and the air to flow inside the center of the tree. But if you chop the leader out when the tree is mature, it leaves a big wound at the very top of the tree, which is not necessarily a good thing, because when the moisture sits on that wound, it's a great place for for fungus to just kind of breed, and to it just the moisture just sits on top of that. And branches they're composed of two parts, especially the large branches. There's the center, which is kind of a darker color. If you've ever seen firewood, you'll see this, where there's a darker core, and then there's a lighter color on the outer ring of the branch, right? So the center core, that's called the heartwood. The heartwood is dead wood. Its only function is to give the tree some structural integrity. It's hard, it's brittle, but it's strong, it's sturdy. It's kind of like the rebar in the center of the tree. That outer ring is a green layer, and it's flexible, and it allows the tree to bend and move. And so that combination between the heartwood and the sapwood, it's this perfect structure that gives the tree both rigid structural integrity with some flexibility to move in the wind. And so it's pretty, I mean, nature's pretty amazing, right? It knows what it's doing much better than you and I do. And it doesn't have to think about it. That's just the way it is. So, you know, if you make a large cut on your fruit tree, what you're doing is you're exposing a large wound, and in time, that wound is going to kind of seal off and heal and close up. But if it's a large wound, that sealing process will take so long that inner core, that heartwood, will begin to rot away. And that affects the structural integrity of the tree. The tree will still live. You've probably seen trees with a hollow, rotted out core. Really old trees often will have a hollow core, and they'll survive year after year after year after year, but they could be stronger. And so if the core of the tree does rot out, it doesn't mean the tree's going to die, but the structural integrity of that tree has been compromised. And so that's one, and that kind of, that was kind of a little tangent, I guess, from the Cytosporum infestation on this peach tree. But what you can do, for one, you got to make sure that you, when you're pruning fruit trees, that you're starting when they're young, and you're pruning the tree so that you don't have to remove large branches. And if you do have to remove a large branch, especially when you're removing the leader, the center part of the tree, you don't want to prune it perpendicular to the leader. We don't want to leave a flat surface on top of that cut. You want to cut it at a slight angle to allow moisture to run off the tree.
Okay.
So have you ever seen a branch that's been cut, a large branch that's been cut, and over time it kind of swells on the edges and starts to seal off?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine that, but on the top of your tree, if you remove a branch that's growing straight up, and you imagine that swelling happening around that wound, it's going to create a little bowl where water will just sit there. And so that is going to just cause just all sorts of problems with your tree. Yeah, rot, and then that Cytosporum, you know, I read an article that said that if you cut just that one pruning technique, by just cutting any branch that's growing upward, if you just cut it at a slight angle, that alone was responsible for providing 50% better results at keeping the Cytosporum infestation from occurring in an orchard.
Excellent.
So 50% better by just cutting that branch at a slight angle, right? So I know I've been blabbing on and on and on, but the point being, pruning is an important part of making sure your tree is healthy, but it's got to be done the right way. And you've got to educate yourself on the correct methods in order to ensure that you're getting superior results and that you're not actually causing damage to the tree. And I don't want to scare people. I think the best advice I can tell people with pruning is just do it when they're young and stay on top of it year after year. And even if you make mistakes when the tree is young, you're much less likely to have these types of problems that I'm talking about. If you wait till the tree's mature or you let it go for years before you prune it, we're just increasing our risk of the tree failing in the future due to pest problems.
Excellent. I think this is great. And, you know, we haven't mentioned your website yet, which is SimplyTrees. Is it SimplyTrees.com?
SimplyTreesUT.com. UT is for Utah. And then from the website, you can access the blog. But the blog is the same. It's just SimplyTreesUT.blogspot.com. If you wanted to just bypass the website, because the website's going to tell you a little bit more about the company and, you know, why you should have me come and prune your fruit trees, but much of your audience is outside of my pruning service area. And so if you just want information, you can go directly to the blog. And I teach an on-site fruit tree pruning workshop. So people in this area hire me to come out to their backyard and teach them how to prune fruit trees one-on-one. And we use their tree as the example. And so the reason I bring this up is because the outline to that course is on my web, is on the blog, and it's free. And so all the information that I teach people is there. It's free. Anybody can access it. And as you go through the outline, if I mention a word that you don't know, chances are it's highlighted. You can click on that word. It will take you to another blog post that gives you more detail on that specific term. So a lot of information there, and it's growing year after year. I'm actually adding a lot more about pest control, because as my clientele grows, I'm getting a lot of questions, and they're usually the questions that I get from my clients are usually pest control related. And so you'll see that there'll be a lot more new posts, blog posts regarding pest control and how to do it organically.
Excellent. So. And probably people are seeing more pests as the environment changes and our climate's changing and different pests are coming into their areas that they haven't had before. So
yeah, that's very true. You know, with the emerald ash borer that's been moving across the country, that's not even native to here. But once introduced, because it has no natural pet predators, it's able to just devastate entire forests of ash trees. So it's true. We're living in a much more hostile environment when it comes to pests than we did even 10 years ago.
Wow. So I don't know anything about that. What's the emerald ash borer?
They believe it was brought. They believe it was brought in and brought in through shipping containers from the packaging material or pallets or freight or something like that was made from ash trees in Asia. And in Asia, it's not a major pest. Like they actually had a hard time just trying to identify what this pest was and where it came from. Oh. But once introduced into the United States, it has just devastated, and it came in through, I think, Michigan or something, through the Great Lakes, and it has completely devastated all of the ash trees in those areas. Oh. And so basically once it's introduced into an area, unless the tree is treated properly, it's 100% mortality rate.
Wow.
But it's just ash trees. So it doesn't apply to fruit trees, but that's just one example of how we're living in a much more hostile environment.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, I mean, there's a lot of information online about it, because it took us years and years to really discover what it was and how to treat it and what it was capable of doing. And so a lot of research has been focused on that one particular pest, and now it's starting to be introduced into some other areas, but now we're a little bit better prepared for it. So,
okay. What other pests are you seeing that are really getting the fruit trees then?
Well, there's probably the one that people complain about one of the most is this coddling moth that that bores into the apple trees. Most apples, anyone that grows apples probably knows about coddling moths. And it's difficult to control because it is a caterpillar. So there are some organic pesticides. Some of them I don't recommend unless absolutely necessary, because they still have, even though they're organic, they come from their extracts from plants. They're not selective in the way that they, it's not like they're going to kill one bug and not another. So there's, you know, neem oil is really common nowadays for insects that have a piercing, sucking mouth part, like aphids and mites and stuff. You can use this horticultural oil that's extracted from the neem tree. So it's organic, but that is also going to, it can affect some of the beneficial insects as well. So neem oil is an organic pesticide. Pyrethrum, which is an extract from a daisy-like chrysanthemum flower. It's organic as well. It attacks the a bug's nervous system and shuts it down. Some bugs will recover from that, but usually what happens is the bug starves to death before, you know, the nervous system shuts down, it's paralyzed, and then it starves until, or it's paralyzed till it starves to death, basically. Mm. So those are two organic pesticides that you can use on fruit trees, but it doesn't mean you're not going to be killing bees and beneficial insects. A lot of it has to do with the timing, you know, making sure that you time it right. You don't want to spray a tree that's in full bloom. If you do, you're going to be killing bees. So that's something to think of. Some insects are only present at certain times of the year. The greater peach tree borer, it bores inside the base of the tree and starts to girdle the base of the tree. But once it's in the bark, it's hard to treat. You can't spray it with stuff. And so what you want to do is you want to time it so that when it emerges and it's flying around and it's laying its eggs at the base of the fruit trees, you want to have something on the base of the tree to protect the tree from the adults laying eggs so that you can interrupt the entire life cycle of that pest. So there are, you know, there are instances where maybe those organic pest controls could be used, but even just because they're organic doesn't mean that they're safe. That's, I guess, the point that I want to make. What's good about something that's organic is that it does decompose as soon as you put it on. It's just the decomposition starts to happen immediately, whereas the synthetic pesticides are designed to be persistent, and they're designed to last for a long time so that a gardener doesn't have to keep spraying over and over and over again, so they can just spray it once and forget it. The problem is that's where those pesticides become persistent in the environment, and then they have a lot longer negative effects to the environment. So a lot of information, sorry to ramble,
No, that's what you're here for. I think it's great. You're not rambling at all. It's very, and nobody's talked about that I can think of anyway, that's the big difference between synthetic and organic pesticides, is that the organic ones are going to decompose and go away. As compared to synthetic ones are going to stick around. One thing they have said is that you have to keep using more and more synthetic pesticides because they don't, they kind of like lose their, I don't know, power,
well,
or whatever you want
I
to
think,
call it.
Yeah, the way that they lose their power is that they're interrupting the natural processes that keep pests from becoming infestations. So what's happening is so here's another story. I spent a few years in the Philippines, mm-hmm. and there are some very large cockroaches in the Philippines.
Oh, really?
There are also some very large spiders in the Philippines. And I don't know which you would prefer crawling on you at night, a large spider or a large cockroach, but either way, you know, we had these fans blowing on us through the night. So So you know, if we saw a cockroach, we killed it. If we saw a spider, we killed it. We didn't have pesticides. We just smashed them. We gave them the sole treatment, is what I call it. We just took the shoe and we just whacked it with the sole of the shoe. So these bugs got the sole treatment. One day I was sitting eating breakfast, and all of a sudden I see this large spider run across the wall carrying a cockroach that was bigger than it.
Oh my goodness.
And I had this kind of aha moment, like, wait a second, I didn't know those spiders were eating our cockroaches. And so I kind of did this little experiment, I guess. I just, if I saw a spider, I left it. And from that point on, I never saw a cockroach in my house again.
Oh, nice.
So if I were to come in and spray my house and kill the spiders and the cockroaches, now there's no beneficial insect feeding on the cockroach, and I've interrupted that whole natural cycle. So now I have to spray on a regular basis in order to keep both of them out of my house. So that's where the pesticides usually lose their magic, is because we've interrupted a lot of these natural processes that take care of pests naturally. And organic, using organic methods to in your garden, the idea is not eradication. We don't want to eradicate anything. It's control. It's finding that threshold. Like, yes, I will take a few apples with some wormholes and I'll cut those wormholes out, but I want to keep my tree from completely dying. I don't want an apricot tree that's mature, that you know, has been planted and has been part of the yard for 50 years. I don't want that to just die completely. So I'm trying to keep an infestation from occurring, but I'm not trying to eradicate anything, because eradication is a bad thing. If you create a vacuum in nature, it's like leaving a piece of dirt fallow. You are going to have more weeds than you want to even dream of pulling if you just leave a bare piece of dirt. And so the same thing with pest control. If you just eradicate all the pests in your garden, it just creates this vacuum. Stuff's going to just come in to fill that void, and it's usually negative, you know, bad pests that are going to fill that void. So that's kind of where we want to work with nature and not fight against it. And by using the synthetic pesticides, we're fighting against nature and just making the problem worse. And I think we talked about that the last time. It's like the chemical fertilizers and stuff, it's like crack. Like, it gives the garden a high, but as soon as it starts to get off that high, you got to replace it with some more crack. I mean, it's an addiction, and once you introduce it, there's no turning back. Or it's a difficult process to detox from chemical warfare.
Awesome. And those were great examples. I feel like they were really like visual, like we could see it, and that made it, you know, so much easier to understand. And I would definitely take a spider over a cockroach any day. We had cockroaches when I first went to college in Brooklyn, and they were just the grossest thing ever. Yeah, I don't mind spiders, but they attack my husband a lot more than me.
Spiders don't bother me. And the ones in the Philippines, they stay on the walls. They don't. I never did see one on the ground or on a countertop or anything. They always stayed on the walls, kind of. And we had geckos too that would hang out inside the house. They just hang out around the lights, mm-hmm. and so the little mosquitoes would come flying around the lights and they just snatch them up. So that's kind of another example of how we can work with nature and it can take care of these pests. And some people would, the thought of having a gecko in their house would, you know, make them shudder, but for me, I thought it was fun to watch these geckos feeding on mosquitoes and the spiders eating cockroaches. And
seems like I had a friend who sent me pictures from Key West down in Florida too. I think they have geckos down there all over the place.
Yeah.
In a similar way. Have you, like, so, all right, I had this guy on the other day, Howard Garrett, for the Dirt Doctor from Texas, who was talking about using cornmeal for fungus. Have you ever tried anything like that?
Not cornmeal. I've heard of corn gluten being used as a natural pre-emergent for weeds. So it naturally kind of keeps the weeds from germinating. But cornmeal, I haven't heard for fungicide. there are, neem oil does have some natural fungicidal properties. Oh, yeah,
that was the other one. We've been, like, using some kind of cinnamon water spray, just like I bought the cinnamon extract that was kind of expensive, like an essential oil, and putting it in water.
Yeah.
And I think that's been working on, like, some houseplants or something, keeping the aphids off.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of plants. Well, I mean, you know, people are afraid of pesticides, but some of the landscape plants that you put in your garden have some natural pesticide qualities, or they're deterrents for pests, and some plants are actually poisonous even to humans. There's a Taxus is the genus. It's a yew, has little red berries, and people call it a yew pine. Those berries are highly toxic to humans, and so you know, part of the reason for keeping pesticides away from your home is the toxicity and the poison, but just know that some of the landscape plants that you're planting in your yard are also toxic and poison, and so if you're concerned about that, it might be good to kind of do a little research and find out what landscape plants are toxic. And then also find out what plants are beneficial, you know, that are maybe deterrent for insects. So planting things like onions, and, you know, I've heard that marigolds will help deter pests. And, you know, there's just a lot of, you can actually plant this feverfew, which is in the chrysanthemum flower family, that has some of that natural pyrethrum in it, and that has some qualities that will help deter pests in your garden. So, you know, companion planting is always a good thing, especially if you're using you know, plants that will naturally deter insects in your garden.
Nice. Okay, well, what else do you want to tell us about fruit trees?
You know, we started talking about the coddling moth and how it was hard to control. Maybe we should jump back in there.
Okay.
So, you know, what I was talking about, there's a lot of organic sprays that you can put on, but the coddling moth, it enters the apple before it starts to feed. It bores in there, and then it starts to feed once it's entered. And so if you spray something on the outside of your apple, it's not real effective for coddling moth. And so what people do is they get these little bags from Japan that they can wrap around each apple, and as the apple will mature inside that bag, but the bag is protecting it from the coddling moth. So that's an example of a mechanical product that will protect your fruit from being attacked by this pest. So we talked about the cultural methods, but there's also some mechanical things that you can do. You can put sticky traps in your fruit trees, and those are usually just, the sticky traps are usually used to identify what's attacking the tree, and then once you kind of identify what it is, then you can use the appropriate methods to keep that under control.
Oh, okay, cool.
There's other traps you've seen, like the wasp traps that people use, these little yellow cones where the wasp flies in and then it gets trapped in there and it can't get out. So there's mechanical methods of pest control that we can use. Even, you know, fly zapper. We had a conversation on Twitter this summer about fly zappers, and yes, they will kill beneficial insects if they are zapped, but sometimes in the evening when you're sitting on your back porch and you have a little fly zapper, you know, and it's going to start zapping mosquitoes for you, like, for me, I would take a few casualties of beneficial insects to keep these mosquitoes from eating me. And it's not something that you're going to leave on 24/7. Maybe you just turn it on when you're sitting on the back porch. You turn it off when you leave. It's a mechanical device designed to help you in your pest control efforts. So there's cultural methods. There's good pruning habits. We have mechanical controls. These are all different things that we can do. We have organic pesticides that we can use. So there's just a lot of tools that a person can use to keep their plants healthy without using synthetic toxic chemicals inside in your landscape. So that's kind of maybe there's two more products that I could kind of mention now while we're talking about it, but there's a product called BT. So this is, we have chemical warfare, this is biological warfare. BT is, it's a bacteria strain, Bacillus thuringiensis, and it infects the gut of caterpillars from, you know, caterpillars from butterflies and moths. So if this bacteria, if you spray this bacteria on your tree and you get a caterpillar eating the leaf, as soon as it starts to feed on that leaf, the bacteria starts to grow inside the caterpillar's stomach, the caterpillar stops feeding and dies. And so if a mammal comes and eats the leaf, or a beneficial insect eats a aphid, you know, it's not going to affect those types of pests, because it's specific to caterpillars and it's just bacteria. So that's one other tool that a person can use. Now, you know, like I said, with all pesticides, there could be casualties. You don't want to spray your fruit tree and then have that drift into a field with a whole bunch of milkweed, and then you get the monarch butterflies feeding on the milkweed and they're getting affected by this bacteria and they're dying off. So you got to be responsible. And you got to understand what you're using and how to use it properly. You got to read the label, follow the label. Even though it's just a bacteria, there could be some negative effects on insects that we don't want to kill. So BT is another product, and then we have diatomaceous earth. That's it's a clay. It's a powdery clay substance that's it's actually fossilized. Well, it's fossilized sea creatures, I guess. That's really fine. It's just a powdery dust. You can dust plants with that, or you can mix it in with water and spray plants with that. And it's just a kind of a powdery dust for us. But if you look under a microscope, it's like razor blades, and it gets inside the exoskeleton of an insect and in the joints, and it wears down those joints. If it's ingested, it cuts up their interior. So diatomaceous earth is another product where it's not a pesticide, but it helps to control pests. It's just a dirt, basically. So those are a couple other products that you can use. So there's a lot of tools out there that you can use in the garden to keep your tree from dying. We're not trying to eradicate anything, but we want to keep the tree from dying. It's not worth putting all that energy into your tree and then see it just completely die one year because of an infestation.
Okay. I was going to say, back when you were talking about the wasp things in the fruit trees, they're also good because wasps eat the honeybees too, right? Seems like, well, people have been talking about lately.
So there's different wasp species, but wasps are considered beneficial in many ways. They're predatory insects. There are some really small wasps that will lay their eggs inside aphids, and then when the eggs hatch, the larva just feeds inside of the aphid, and then it emerges and the aphid dies. And there's other wasps that lay their eggs on caterpillars. Mud daubers, it's a wasp that creates this little mud nest with little holes in it. I don't know if you've seen those.
They show up on the back of my picture frames in my house.
Yeah, so the mud dauber, if you were to find a mud dauber nest that doesn't have a hole in it, that means that the larva is still in there. The hole in the mud dauber nest is the larva emerging out as an adult. But I have some pictures of this as well that I could show you, but I pulled off a mud dauber nest that was steel sealed off, and I looked inside, and it's packed full of spiders. So what the wasp does is it flies around, it stings a spider, it grabs the spider, it stuffs this tube full of spiders, lays its egg in there. When the egg hatches, the larva feeds on those spiders, and then it emerges as an adult. Oh. So they're predators, and they feed on other insects, and each species kind of has a different habit and has different preference on food. And so it's just good to be able to identify, and this is a good point for any pest, if you're concerned about a pest, try to identify what that pest is, learn about its feeding and breeding habits, and you can determine whether or not it's a beneficial insect or a harmful insect. And if it's harmful, once you understand the breeding cycle, you can interrupt that cycle. Or if you understand their feeding cycle, you can eliminate what it's feeding on, and that will eliminate the pest. And so the more you understand, the more self-education that you do to learn about a specific insect or pest, the better you will be able to control that in your garden. And so identification is an important part of that. And I know we usually ask about an internet resource. This might be a good one for your listeners. If there's a Facebook page called like Insect Identification.
Really?
Facebook page. And I mean, I have learned so much about pests from that page. You just shoot a picture of it. And a lot of people will submit these blurry pictures. It's a little harder to identify. If you can, you know, just move your phone back and forth until you get a nice clear image and get as close as you can, but keep it clear, and you post it on that Facebook page, there are some amazingly smart people that probably just watch that all day, and they're happy to help you identify what that pest is. And so it's an awesome resource, better than any website that gives you a list of different bugs with pictures. Like, you can take a picture of that pest, put it on the Facebook group, and within minutes you can get a positive ID on that.
That's awesome. Okay, yep. Cool. I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah, there's thousands of members of that group, and there's probably thousands of experts in that group that are waiting to help you out. So that's a huge resource.
Nice. All right. Anything else you want to tell us? Do you want to answer any of the other questions I usually ask? Like, what grew well this year, or what you're excited to try different?
I think last year I mentioned that we're in between places. We're actually in a temporary place now. So I haven't spent a lot of time in a garden. I'm so busy just helping other people with their gardens, but you know, it seems like last year, it seems like the peaches did pretty good, the apples did pretty good. One thing that didn't do well, or that seldomly does well in Utah, are cherries. Oh. And it seems like at this point, when a customer says they want to plant a cherry tree, mm-hmm. my comment is, yeah, they make great bird food. because it's just so hard for anyone in this area to time the harvest correctly. The birds know exactly when they're ready to harvest. And I've had several customers kind of watch their cherries, and then the next morning they come out with a bowl to harvest, and there's not a single cherry on the tree.
Oh my goodness.
So within 24 hours, the birds have cleaned the entire tree of cherries.
Wow. Well, it's good if you want to watch birds, maybe.
Yeah. For that one day that they've targeted your tree as being ready to harvest. Yeah.
Wow.
You probably could watch birds. But that's something that people have struggled with in this area. And there are organic controls there too, with, you know, an example of a mechanical control would just be like a netting of some sort. You could put a net over the tree, but you still need to be careful because some birds will get caught up in that net.
Oh.
And so you don't want to get them stuck in there and have them die because of the net. But yeah, another good point would be to make sure that you prune your tree in such a way that the height is down low enough that you could put a net over it. Some cherry trees get so tall that no matter how good you were, it would be almost impossible to get a net over that tree.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yep, another... the birds devastated our tree last year too. I remember our cherry tree. It just seemed like that exactly what you're saying. Like overnight, all of a sudden, the cherries were just all gone.
Yeah.
We just have pie cherries though.
But those the birds love them, and they're still good to bottle up. They make a great pie filling.
They have nice flowers in the spring. I love when the cherry tree blooms.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite times of the year when everything starts to bloom, and it's timed, you know, it's almost predictable. You can see the apricots start blooming, and well, first, you know, you get the crocus and the forsythia, and you know, you start getting the apricots and you know, magnolias, and then the pears and apples, and you know, it's fun. The red buds kind of come a little bit later, and it's fun to kind of see that as the different varieties of plants all bloom at a kind of a different rate, but it's always kind of in the same order. It's kind of fun to watch that.
Hey, speaking of the weather, when we first started talking, you were saying something about it might rain today, and that you can't do your thing in the rain because then that will create, was it fungus or some kind of moisture, or just what were you gonna
say? So fire blight is a bacterial disease that affects a lot of mostly apples and pears in this area. And so if there's any fire blight on a tree and you start climbing it in the rain, it's spread by that. The rain spreads that really bad. And so whenever I'm pruning and moving through the tree and touching stuff, and you just run the risk of really causing a lot of damage from this fire blight in the tree. And so you shouldn't do pruning when the tree is wet or when it's raining. You should make sure that everything's dry. And there's other fungal disease that can be spread when things are wet.
Okay.
So, yeah. So today's kind of it's a rain day. Hopefully it dries up, but I'm probably going to have to do my books today, which kind of... It's the worst part of business, right?
Yep, I know that one well. All right. Well, I mean, you've shared tons of stuff today. I know people are going to be thinking about their trees and what they can do and finding some ways to help them stay healthy so they don't have to use even any of those organic pesticides if they don't have to, and just keeping everything healthy out in their garden and their yard. So anything?
Yeah, I hope it wasn't too much information. I hope it was in an order that kind of made some sense. And hopefully, you know, it's a complicated subject to talk about pest control, especially organic pest control. It's complicated. There's a ton of information, and it can be overwhelming. But it's best just to start somewhere. And I would probably suggest if you see a bug in your landscape, maybe that's where you start. Just take a picture of that, put it on the Facebook page, identify it, learn about it. You know, it's not something that a person could sit down and learn everything they need to learn one evening or one weekend. It's something that you as a gardener, it's just like plants. You have to plant a plant and kind of watch it from as it grows from a baby to a mature plant, and it blooms and it fruits. And, you know, that's when you really learn about that plant, is by experiencing it. And so it's, you know, we put so much emphasis on plants, but really you should put as much emphasis on the pests that attack those plants, and you're going to have much better success as a gardener if you do that, and really educate yourself on pests. If you identify a pest, learn about that pest, learn about organic ways to control that pest, there's just a lot to learn, but hopefully this interview kind of gave people a good overview and allowed, you know, gave them somewhere to start on their education, I guess.
Yeah. So. Do you want to just like review really quickly the four things you were talking about to keep your trees healthy in the beginning? You were saying, about like the air around the base and.
So basically, just I think you mean like the, with the cultural
yeah.
practices. So we want to make sure that we have good cultural practices, make sure your plants are healthy, to get enough water, that you're mulching them, that the soil is good so that it can feed the plant and give the plant all the nutrients it needs. Make sure you're not watering in the evening and putting moisture on the leaves that just sits there stagnant all night long, especially in the summer when it's hot and dark and damp. You're just going to get all sorts of mildews and fungus growing on the plants. So like that's an example of another example of cultural, you as the gardener, what you do to your landscape to keep it healthy. That is probably the most important part of making sure you have a healthy garden, as the cultural. And then proper pruning techniques, make sure that you're pruning when the tree's young, that you're cutting, making the cuts the right way, that you're not cutting large branches. Pruning is also going to open up the center. It's going to allow light and airflow through the tree so that it stays dry. It opens it up so that beneficial insects can come in and feed on the harmful insects. And then we talked a little bit about mechanical controls like traps and bags to put around your fruit, netting, sticky traps. There are some organic pesticides like pyrethrum and neem oil that could be used last resort, but you need to make sure that you're timed correctly and that you know why you're applying it and where to apply it and at what point do you decide to introduce that. We have biological control with BT that affects the gut of caterpillars, and then we have stuff like diatomaceous earth. It's the clay that you can lay around. You can dust plants or mix it with water and spray it on plants. And so just a lot of different tools there. I think that pretty much covers everything we talked about, but it's a good overview of how to organically keep pests from becoming an infestation and ultimately killing a mature fruit tree.
Excellent. Well, once again, you were a wonderful guest, and I think listeners, because I'm sure a lot of people have a fruit tree, if not several fruit trees in their yard. And so they're going to be excited to hear about these healthy ways that they can take care of the tree and our environment. And I was going to say, well, I am, because we have one old tree and it's got one of those big leader branches up top. So I'm glad that I talked to you today before we cut that big branch off, that we make sure if Mike trims that he cuts it at the right angle. So I'm going to have him look at that website and make sure he sees that.
And I think that study was, I want to say it was either from the Cornell or Purdue IPM, which is in like insect pest management. It was from one of those two universities, but it was talking about the Cytosporum infestation and how making that cut at an angle will reduce your risk by up to 50%.
So. Okay, because that's like our first fruit tree, and like that's, you know, I can totally tell where like you know, it's like that old man. Like, I would be really sad if something happened to that apple tree because it's been there and it's, you know, one of our most productive. It puts out a lot of apples and one of our oldest and first. And so, you know, there's a lot of memories with that tree. And I know what I was going to ask. So the birds that maybe will come eat your cherries or something, they also eat a lot of the insects. So they're good to have around for that reason too, right? Birds are big insect eaters.
And they're affected by chemical pesticides as well. There's a lot of granular pesticides that people spread out, granules on their lawn, and the birds will come and, they have a crop where they feed on seeds and plant material, and then they pick up gravel, and the crop kind of crushes all that together before they move it to their stomach. And so they come in and they pick up little rocks and pebbles and sand, and sometimes they pick up these granules, and that'll kill them. So yeah, we want to keep the birds healthy too.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, some people maybe who have an older tree are going to be like, wow, maybe if I do some of this stuff, my old tree is going to, you know, produce a little better this year. Or there's things I can do to bring that tree, make that tree a little healthier again. And maybe it's not, you know, just going to die and have to get cut down. So,
yeah, I hate cutting trees down if I don't have to. I usually talk people out of it if they, even if there's only one living branch remaining and it's sticking way out to one side, and all the other lateral branches have been removed. I tell people it's going to take you years of growth to get as much fruit as that one branch is going to get. So plant your replacement and let's just nurse this as long as it, you know, as long as it produces fruit, let's just leave it. And that will give you a few years to get its replacement up and going. And so I talk people out of removing trees as much as possible, because even the oldest ones, if you know what you're doing, you can get them to produce well. So.
Nice. Okay. Well, all right. Have a great day. Thanks for coming back and sharing with everybody. I'm sure they're going to love this episode as much as the first one. And don't forget to go to Simply Trees UT for Utah, simplytreesutah.com or simplytreesut.blogspot.com.
Correct. Yeah, I'd love to answer any questions too. If you comment on the blog or send me an email or send me a Twitter, you know, tweet me, or I also started a backyard fruit growers Facebook group.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, this year it has about 1,200 members now.
Oh my goodness! But
yeah, all those places, you know, you can find Simply Trees on Facebook. There's just a lot of, nowadays with social media, there's a lot of places people can go. You know, ask me questions. I love answering questions. Part of the reason why I like to answer questions is because if you have a question, somebody else has that same question. If I answer your question, I can use that question and answer to help thousands of other people with the same problems. And so ask me questions, comment on the blog, you know, email me, tweet me, whatever you prefer. But yeah, reach out. I'd love to help anybody that's out there that has questions about fruit trees.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you, Jackie.
This is Jackie Marie Beyer, and I am just hoping that you're as excited to be learning and gardening this spring as I am. And so I'm really wondering what you're up to this spring. And I am super excited to announce that I am finally going to launch my Facebook group, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So I really want to hear about your journey, and I really hope that you will come there and share your questions, your successes, your challenges, your pictures, your, you know, connect with the other listeners in the audience, and, you know, what's your vision for the future, or what's your vision for your garden, for your organic oasis? You know, are you planting flowers? What are you doing? You know, what project are you taking on this spring, this summer? You know, I really want to learn, you know, what do you want to know? Is there, you know, what kind of guests do you like? You know, who have you enjoyed? Who would you like to hear more of? You know, what topics are you really enjoying? You know, is it raising honeybees or planting perennials, or, you know, what kind of seeds are you looking for? You know, are they annuals, perennials? You know, what kind of vegetables, what kind of herbs are you planting? What flowers? Do you have any questions that we can answer? You know, what guests have you liked the most? You know, so what, is there something you want me to find out? Like, I'm really going to try to be as active in Facebook, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook page and the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So, you know, if you're interested in, you know, learning more and reaching out and connecting with other people, you know, especially, you know, the great thing about it is all of a sudden, you know, you might meet three people who are in your area. Just like since I started my podcast, you know, I met Robin Kelson and Laura Behenna. So it was so fun to see them last week. And Pamela Lund, who, if you haven't heard her episode, she's just got a great story. You know, well, Robin's been in the top 10 since she aired. But to meet these, you know, people, and then I went to the Aero Conference and met more people that are living locally near me here in Montana that I never knew till I started my podcast. And so if you join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group, you'll probably meet people in your area. And then maybe I'll be able to find some people from the other states, because I think I'm up to like state 20 or 21 still. So there's still more states that I haven't interviewed people from than states that I have. One of these days, I'm going to read that list and try to get some people, some listeners. Listeners always make great guests, I think. You've all got more knowledge than you think to share and some answer that somebody else has been looking for. So if you want to come on and share your gardening journey, you know, I'm always looking. But today, I really want to talk about, you know, join our group. You know, let me know what can I do for you, even if you don't want to do the Facebook thing. I totally understand. Or if you have another channel that you like. You know, reach out to me, email me, go to the website. You know, you can connect with me. There's the get in touch page. There's a listener survey on there where you can, you know, which basically is just easy questions about, you know, what's your biggest challenge that I can help you with. But just most of all, I hope if you want to, you will come join the Facebook group, connect with me, and just let's change the world together. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.